Welcome to Life Changing Insights with Dr. Alan Simberg, a show for providing self-improvement information that has a positive effect, brought to you by the Tough Talk Radio Network. Now here's your host, Dr. Alan Simberg.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Life Changing Insights. This is your host, Dr. Alan Simberg, and I want to thank you for joining me this afternoon. If you want more information about the Tough Talk Radio Network, by the network. If you're not able to listen to any of the live shows, they are archived and available to those live in Wisconsin, where they grow organic vegetables, and they use those vegetables to produce whole food supplements. Now, a term that I can use that everyone would be familiar with is vitamins. However, there is a difference between whole food supplements and synthetic supplements. Synthetic supplements are products that you buy in a health food store, a pharmacy, and basically they are composed primarily of chemicals. Whole food supplements, on the other hand, have organically grown vegetables. Now, not all whole food supplements use organic vegetables, but all whole food supplements do have vegetables and foods in them. And the reason for that is we cannot duplicate what nature produces. When we try to duplicate through the use of chemistry what nature provides to us, we leave out certain known and unknown substances which can have a rather strong effect on us. The known factors are in the food and the unknown factors are in the food. The synthetic supplements are, in a certain sense, shortchanging you on the nutrients that you need. So that is why I would recommend the whole food supplements. And Standard Process, in a sense, has a sister company called MediHerb. That's M-E-D-I, Herb. And as the name suggests, they produce herbal supplements. The thing that's positive about those particular products is they are made from unstandardized herbs. They are composed of unstandardized herbs. What that basically means is, once again, the substances in that product are as nature provides them. They are not tampered with in any way and not synthetic. So as I recommend the Standard Process whole food supplements, I also recommend the MediHerb supplements. You have the best chance possible not only of maintaining your health, but also of regaining health through proper nutrition. Now, before I introduce my first guest, I'm going to talk with you today about anger management and the whole idea of anger. We are raised to believe that anger is bad or wrong. And actually, there's really nothing wrong with anger. Anger in and of itself is just an emotion like anything else. Like any other emotion. What really matters is how we manage and express the anger. It is important to remember that anger is something we use to protect ourselves. It is a fear-based emotion and does have a positive function. So when I'm talking with you about how you express your anger, there's nothing wrong with having a bit of an anger tone to your voice, but quite obviously, if you resort to physical violence, you resort to throwing things or breaking things, that is really not a... It will only cause them either to respond the same way or to back off and shut down. And either reaction is not going to get the situation to be any better. At the end of today's show, during my life-changing insight tip of the week, I will be offering guidelines on how you can manage and express your anger in a way that can be very helpful. Now, again, before I introduce my first guest, I do want to mention something that... tribute a chapter to a book, commonly referred to as a compilation book, in which all of the authors provided background information about themselves, provided information about how their lives contributed to what they're doing today. And one of the important features of this book is that it offers suggestion. Different aspects in many different situations. The name of the book is Share Your Message with the World. It is inspirational and educational. The name of the book, and if you're interested in purchasing the book, you can go to www.howourlivescanbeguided.com to learn more about the book, and you can also purchase it there. We're going to go to commercial break, and when we come back, I'm going to introduce my first guest.
Are you feeling burnt out or lost on where to go or what to do next when it comes to your business? If you feel like you own a job instead of a business, or if your business is running you instead of you running it, we can help. The Thrive Business Center was created to educate and support small business owners. With a strategic approach and a proven method, we'll help you identify what is working well in your business and what is not. Then, together, we can establish an action plan with an implementation process so that your business can get back to thriving. For more information, go to ThriveBusinessCenter.com. ThriveBusinessCenter.com.
Live at Choice, where your imagination becomes your reality. If you can imagine it, it's possible. If you can believe it, it's yours. We get it. You're done with the way it is now. You're finished with all the frustration around why you feel stuck and your life isn't working. Imagine what your life would be like if you could have all the answers and see new possibilities. We at Live at Choice choose to make a difference. Live at Choice has developed a proven process and a series of questions that lead participants to the answers they seek, gaining new understanding and self-awareness for both your personal and professional life. If you're ready to get to the life you want, contact us today. Visit liveatchoice.com to get started.
Join Judy Hoberman on her radio show, Selling in a Skirt, Mondays at noon Central, for exciting discussions about challenges for women in today's society. The talk is about women in business, work and life balance, leadership, and current events related to gender communication. Be prepared to be inspired, motivated, and challenged. Selling in a Skirt with Judy Hoberman on the Tough Talk Radio Network is your connection to women nationally, internationally, and globally. So get comfy and see what the buzz is all about. Listen live on Mondays at noon by going to sellinginaskirtwithjudyhoberman.com.
Have you been feeling tired, having trouble managing your emotions, or just feeling out of sorts? The problem could be your vitamin supplement. There is a big difference between synthetic and natural vitamins. Synthetic vitamins do not contain all of the substances that naturally occur in nature. Natural whole food vitamins provide all of the factors necessary to help you maintain or regain your health. For more information, please contact Dr. Alan Simberg at alansimberg.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Life Changing Insights. This is your host, Dr. Alan Simberg, and I want to thank you for providing hospice nursing care for the last 12 years. She does educational presentations at various organizations as well as radio and TV interviews. Judy's book, titled Spirit Matters, How to Remain Fully Alive with a Life-Limiting Illness, received Central Florida's Woman of Hope Award for her book and her work with hospice. And now let's learn more about Judy. Hello, Judy, and welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. Gives me an opportunity to share what I know to be true.
Yes, and we're going to get into that. And as a way of helping the listening audience to have a sense of who you are and what you do, I'm going to start by asking you to tell us about where you grew up and how your earlier years and life experiences have contributed to what you're doing today.
Well, I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I had my first two children there, and then my husband was transferred, and we went to Cleveland, Ohio, and we had our third child. And really what led me to what I'm doing today is when my husband left me and our three children, and my world changed, and my life became so much more difficult. I think that's what led me to hospice. The depression that I went through during that time and the healing that occurred helped me to have empathy for my patients, I believe, and gave me the spirit that I needed to help them renew their own spirit. Most of the patients we were seeing brought on our program, their spirit, who I'd identify that as the person inside their body. I'm not referring to the Holy Spirit, although I could do a whole talk on that, but I'm talking about the human spirit. People that came into our program, their spirit was so depleted, and Alan, they didn't have anything left to fight the disease that was killing their body. So when I was able to make some changes and help them along that path, I saw spirits reviving, and wonderful things happened. And so that's mostly why I wrote my book, because no one was speaking about this. And I was, you know, this was the early years of hospice, and there wasn't a lot known. And I would go to conferences all through the country, and I wasn't hearing anything about this subject. So that's what led me to start teaching. I taught in colleges and nursing schools, and that's what led me to write my book. So that's a long story about where this all came from.
Okay, but I think that's important for the listening audience to hear that, because, you know, even the title of your book, and again, I'm going to repeat that for the benefit of the listening audience, Spirit Matters, How to Remain Fully Alive with a Life-Limiting Illness. I mean, that there's really a very positive, hopeful image that the title of your book conveys. And I think one of the biggest things that I see there is, as you said, when you first started meeting with people, it seemed that they were so depleted and their spirit was depleted. And by you writing what you did in your book, you're giving people hope and helping them to see that they can remain fully alive with a life-limiting illness.
And I saw them do wonderful things if they got onto our program in a timely fashion. Unfortunately, that doesn't happen, and it hasn't changed in the 26 years that I've been doing hospice. It hasn't changed. We still get people on very, very late in their illness. And what people don't realize, dying can take a very long time. It can take weeks, months, or sometimes even years. And how you treat your spirit or how it's being handled during that time, that's what makes a difference. And, Alan, I sent patients who were bedbound. Once we got their spirit revived and their symptoms managed and all the other things that occur during a terminal illness, and actually help their families to renew their spirits, I sent patients on vacation. I sent them back to work. They continued to lead their lives, and they lived longer. And that was just such a wonderful experience for me to be able to help people do that. One thing I wanted to tell you and your listeners, September 17th, there was a report by the Institute of Medicine just this past year, so it's just a month old, not even a month. They sent out a 500-page report called Dying in America. The people that worked on this report, there were 22 professionals from all over the country. They were college professors, physicians, just every aspect of professionalism, financial and whatnot. And the results in this 500-page report states that we're doing a terrible job in our country on death and dying. And it also adds that we're spending a lot of money unnecessarily, and it's wasting our healthcare dollars. Now, I don't know how many millions it costs them to do this report. All they would have had to do, Alan, was read my book, my $13 book, because it's in there. And also included what's in my book is, what do you need to know, and what would make a difference? And they're doing this study, and it's all right there. It's not rocket science. A few things that people need to know that they don't know. Number one, physicians who make these decisions, they're not trained in end-of-life care. And when I go out and give these presentations, people just find this unbelievable. Physicians are taught to cure. And that's really, really great if your condition is curable. But 100% of us are going to die. And the statistics show that 90% of us are going to die out of a chronic lingering illness. That's a lot of people. And if the physicians aren't trained, and they aren't, about end-of-life care, they don't know what they don't know. And that's another reason I wrote my book and why I go out speaking and why I do these shows, is to try to educate people and to empower people so that they don't get caught up in a system that doesn't know when to stop and that causes far too much unnecessary suffering. And the reason this happens and is not exposed is because we bury all these mistakes, and the caregivers are so devastated that it's not followed through. And I know that I can save this unnecessary suffering, and there are many things that will help with that. And that's what my book gives you, lessons on what you need to know. And then it tells some stories, some successful stories about my patients and what a difference good end-of-life care meant to them and their loved ones. And I think that's why I was given the Woman of Hope Award, because my book's very hopeful. And I'm on a quest, Alan, to change how we die in America. And I thank you for allowing me to present this to your audience, because that's my mission.
Well, I think that the work that you do and the book that you've written is extremely important. And one of the things that I wanted to ask you about, something that you've been saying, and you may have said it and I missed it, I'm not sure, so that's why I'm going to ask you, because I want to make sure that in case I missed it, that the listening audience doesn't miss it. You talked about the idea of doctors burying their mistakes. And I wonder if you could just talk a little bit more about that. Like, what do you mean by their mistake? Like, what is it that they're burying?
Well, I think, I was talking about we as a nation bury these mistakes.
Ah, okay.
We keep treating people far longer than many times they want to be treated, but they no longer can speak for themselves. And physicians not having the training on end-of-life care, they don't know they're doing this. However, we have done studies in hospice, and we have found that physicians will continue treating their patients far longer than they would allow treatment on themselves, because they know what happens. And I think that some of the reasons for this, you know, if you've had a physician for a very long time, they become family to you, and they have a hard time letting go. And they think maybe one more treatment. Well, very often that one more treatment causes more harm than good. And I have a chapter in my book about that, when medical care causes more harm than good. And I think that if I could share one thing with your listeners that I think is so important, you need to have your durable power for medical care written down, and you need your living will. Yes, those are two documents that are very, very important. But the other piece that is missing from that is you need to have the conversation with your loved ones. There's nothing more important than that. Your loved ones need to know what's acceptable for you in your end-of-life care. Not only your loved ones, but your physicians, your clergy, your attorney. They need to know what your feelings are about this. Because you can get, as I said before, caught up in a system that doesn't know when to stop. And in my own family, my father was dying, and I had brought him to be with me. I mean, I do hospice. Well, he has a grandson that's a physician, an orthopedic surgeon that lives in another state. And my nephew doesn't know a thing about end-of-life care. He knows a lot about orthopedics. And his father, my brother, who also lived in another state, the two of them would get on the phone with the doctor that was treating my dad and insists that all treatments continue. Well, thank goodness I had the conversation with my father, and I was his spokesman when he could no longer speak for himself, and I was able to stop these treatments because they were futile, and they were causing my dad a lot of unnecessary suffering. So have this conversation with your family, because I can guarantee there'll be one family member that's going to argue and want all treatments to continue. And who's the physician going to listen to? With all the lawsuits that are going on, they have to save themselves, because they have to save their medical practice. So have that conversation. It's so very, very important.
That you just shared with the listeners, and I'm just asking this in case there's someone who does not know the answer. The documents that you identified that really need to be filled out when a person is able to be rational about what they're saying, how can they get a hold of those documents?
They can go to any hospital, and they will have free handouts. You can download them online. Go to the National Hospice and Palliative Association, and you can download those documents. One thing you need to know, this is a federal regulated program, these documents, but each state can make changes. So make sure you get the document for your state, and if you move or if you go somewhere off season, say we have snowbirds in Florida that come down from the north for maybe 3 or 4 months, they need to have a document from Florida as well as their home state. Sometimes they will be interchangeable, but sometimes they won't. So you need to make sure you get it for your state. And they're free. You do not need an attorney for this, Alan. You need two witnesses that are unrelated to you. So you can take it to your Sunday school class. You can take it to your neighbors. Just two witnesses, and then it becomes a legal document.
Well, that's very interesting what you just said, that all you need is two unrelated witnesses.
Correct.
That is so important to know. You know, because I think whenever you're talking about legal documents, you immediately do think of attorneys.
Mm-hmm. And you don't, that's not necessary.
No. Now, I don't know if you know the answer to this, or this might just be something that, you know, you would kind of, in a sense, hypothesize about. But when you were saying about, like, doctors don't realize sometimes that they're overtreating, or maybe, as you said, there's an emotional attachment there.
Mm-hmm.
How can they know that they're overtreating? How could they know, you know what, maybe it's time for me to back off?
Well, one of the things that this report from the Institute of Medicine, they are going to do some broad teaching in the medical community, which has been needed for so long. That's one way they're going to learn. They're going to be taught, which they haven't been taught. To me, that's the most important area where they will learn. You know, they need speakers to come to their conferences. They have conferences they go to a lot. They need speakers that know about this. I would love to do that. I have had retired physicians come to my talks where I live, and every single one of them, and we have a lot of retired physicians here, every one of them have come up to me after and said, Judy, I wish I had known this. I can think back on times where this would have made such a difference in my patient's care. How sad that is. Because they're sad about it. They're not gloating about it. Another thing is nursing homes. They need education because, you know, everyone that's doing health care now, they're losing money with these health care cuts. And so they're hanging on, trying to keep patients, because that's how they survive. And this education piece is so important. Alan, before we finish, I would just like to tell your listeners, I do have a website.
Hey, Judy? Hello, Judy?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. I need to interrupt you for a moment.
Okay.
I do need to go to a commercial break. If you could please hold on to that thought, can continue when we come back.
Okay.
Okay. So we're going to go to commercial break, but before we do, I want to remind everyone that this preceding segment was brought to you by Standard Process. And Standard Process is a company in Wisconsin that has a farm where they grow organic vegetables that they use to make whole food supplements. We're going to go to commercial break, and when we come back, I'm going to continue speaking with Judy.
Are you one of those people who deal with issues that life throws at you on a daily basis? Then you need to tune in to Life's Issues to hear Lloyd Rosen get the answers to those nagging problems. Begin to turn your life into that positive journey you've always wanted. You've always had the ability. Now get the information to complete the journey. Tune in every Thursday afternoon at 1:30 p.m. Central Time to hear Lloyd ask the questions that get the answers you are looking for. Lloyd wants to help those that are dealing with life's issues. Check out Lloyd's blog at LloydRosen.com for more information about daily problems.
Did you know that an estimated 52 million Americans listened to internet radio in the last month, or that weekly internet radio audience has increased 60% over the last year, and that more than 8 in 10 people are online from any location? Tough Talk Radio Network is a company dedicated to providing a platform that allows opportunities for guests, hosts, and sponsors to market themselves through the internet radio medium where they can be heard by millions. To find out how Tough Talk Radio Network can help you, go to toughtalkradionetwork.com.
Join Dr. Alan Simberg and his guests every Tuesday from 3 to 4 p.m. Central Standard Time on Life Changing Insights. Life Changing Insights is a show dedicated to providing its listeners with self-improvement information that has a positive effect on an individual's mental, physical, and spiritual being, as well as unresolved relationship issues. For more information or to be a guest on Life Changing Insights, go to Life Changing Insights with DrAlanSimberg.com. Life Changing Insights, every Tuesday from 3 to 4 p.m. Central Standard Time, right here on the Tough Talk Radio Network.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to Life Changing Insights. This is your host, Dr. Alan Simberg. And before we went to commercial, break, you were about to make another point, and you didn't quite get a chance to really say it, so I want to pick up where we took left off at that point.
Okay, I think we left off with me saying that I can give you my website if your listeners would like to go there and find more information. And that is www.spiritmattersauthor.com.
And we could also do that at the end of your interview.
Okay.
While we were on commercial break, was there anything else that you were thinking about saying in terms of continuing any of your thoughts? Or I could just ask you another question because there's lots to talk about.
Well, one of the things that when we were talking about physicians not knowing, I'd like to tell your listeners what I think is important as concerns their physician and the relationship with your physician. Many people will go to their physician and say, is it time for hospice, either for their loved one or for themselves? And I'm here to tell you that's the wrong question. Instead of that question, ask your doctor, would you be surprised if in the next 6 months I or my loved one, the ill person, would die? And if the physician says, no, I wouldn't be surprised, then I'm here to tell you it's time for hospice. Hospice can come in, get established, and do their magic, because to me it is magical when it's done correctly and when it's done early enough. And then if the patient wants to go back on treatment, or, you know, their condition is getting much better and they don't need hospice anymore, then we just discharge them. And we can bring them back on at a later date. And I believe every successful hospice program has discharges that are unrelated to death. We have a local hospice program here that I volunteer for. And one of the nurses was on dialysis, kidney dialysis, and she went on hospice. And her goal was eventually to stop the dialysis, and she knew she was dying. Well, she started doing better, Alan, and discharged from hospice, and she's back working as a hospice nurse. Wonderful things can happen. And I think that question, would you be surprised if I or my loved one would die in the next 6 months, is an important question. Because if you say to your physician, is it time for hospice? I'm here to tell you, they don't know when it's time for hospice. Let hospice be called in and do an evaluation. And you don't even need a physician's order for that. You can call a local hospice program, and there, I don't know how many thousands of programs there are. You can call a hospice program and have them come in and do an evaluation. And they'll let you know if it's time for hospice. Another thing that came to my mind on commercial was that when I first started doing hospice back in 1989, most of our patients had cancer diagnosis. Well, that's changed now. Hospice is for all end-stage disease, end-stage heart, lung, the neuromuscular diseases, kidney diseases, the dementia, and for really old people that are just wearing out, we call that failure to thrive. or as I fondly call it, they just ran out of gas. And we're living a lot longer. And the question is, are we living better? Our community, Alan, we have over 100,000 people 55 and older in our community. And if you could see the spirit of the people that live here and some of the things that these people do, it's phenomenal. Keeping that spirit alive and well is just, it's so important. And it's possible.
Question for you. Because with some of the people that I speak to, there seems to be some confusion about what hospice actually provides. And specifically what I'm referring to is that some people have told me, in terms of obviously their opinion, that hospice doesn't really do anything. They just sort of are there while you die. And from everything you're saying, that doesn't sound to be accurate to me. I wonder if you could just explain what is it that hospice provides to the individual?
Well, first of all, for the diagnosis, you have to have a life-limiting illness with an expected lifespan of 6 months or less. But that's only if the disease takes its normal course. Well, we're all different, so who knows what the normal course is.
Mm-hmm.
We need a physician's order to begin hospice care. But as I said earlier, not for hospice to come in and explain the program.
Ah.
That's part of the criteria. Now, what does hospice do? Hospice is done by a team of hospice workers. There are nurses. There are social workers. There are bereavement coordinators. There are lots and lots of volunteers that are just wonderful for our patients and families. They come in and sit with a patient so a caregiver can go out with a friend for lunch or to have their hair done or go grocery shopping or sometimes just to take a nap, because caregiving is really, really hard. I have a whole chapter in my book called My Heroes. Caregivers are my heroes. They just go on and on and on. And so part of hospice work is to keep the spirit of the caregivers alive and well, because if it isn't, they can't do their caregiving. So we do a lot of care by filling in for caregivers. Maybe I felt my job as a hospice nurse was to manage symptoms, to keep people from going back to the hospital. Most of them were so tired of spending their days and evenings and nights in hospitals. They didn't want to be in the hospital anymore. So my job was to keep them at home or in a home-like setting and keep their symptoms managed. I was kind of the eyes and ears of the physician in the home, and then I would make calls to the physician and tell the physician what I was seeing and what my recommendations were. And very often they would listen to me because I know end-of-life care, symptom management. I taught pain management. We know how to manage pain in end-of-life situations, I think, better than anybody, including physicians. And they came to trust me, and I had wonderful results. And, Alan, it wasn't always narcotics that brought pain relief. We see what works, and what works is not necessarily narcotics. So, this was my job, and my job was to teach the caregiver how to care for the person at home. I mean, I went into homes where the patient hadn't had a bath in 2 weeks because the caregiver didn't know how to do it. I mean, very often the caregivers are elderly and frail themselves. So my job was to teach them and then to go back as often as necessary. to enforce my teaching so that they felt empowered themselves. And that really raised their spirit because they wanted to be helpful. They just didn't know how. And also, hospice is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, including holidays. Much of my hospice work I did in the middle of the night because our patients don't want 911 called. So when they get into a problem, they call hospice and the nurse responds immediately. If it wasn't something that I could manage over the phone, I was in my car going to that home. And I did most of my hospice work in Cleveland, Ohio, in the snow and the blizzards. And many times my patients were a 45-minute to an hour drive away. And I'll tell you, I did a lot of praying on the road because I was the only person that was going to that home to help those people. And so many times my prayers were answered, and answers came to me that, well, they didn't come from me. And I had solutions to problems. And that enabled my patients to stay home. And that's where they wanted to be. And we have a whole team that do this work. And then we meet once a week or once every other week. And we meet as the whole team. And we have nurses' aides that can go in the home and help with the personal care. We all met and we would discuss each patient and each caregiver and each family and decide what was the best way to care for this person and this family as a group so that that patient could stay home with their symptoms managed and the caregiver given the support they need, and the patient could go on living their life. That we had chaplains, and they would address some of the spiritual issues. And many dying people have many spiritual issues. I used to write on a 3x5 card and give it to the caregivers and my patients the five things that you need to say to each other before the death occurs. And one of the things is, thank you. And another one is, forgive me if I've hurt you anyway. Another one is, I forgive you. You need to say goodbye. And you need to say, this thank you is so important. And sharing with that person, see, this is what we teach. Sharing with that person what their life has meant to you. We all need to know that our life has meant something to someone. I can remember when my mother was dying, sitting with her and talking about things that only happen with the two of us, how she would take me on shopping trips, and then we would hide things from my dad because he would get angry, and she spoiled me rotten. And I would, you know, I sat with her and told her what that meant to me as a young girl, having that kind of a mother that loved me unconditionally. And I think that was important not only for my mom, but for me. I needed to let her know that, how we would go when things weren't good at home. I was raised in a dysfunctional family, and when things weren't good at home, she and I would go to the department store and try on big hats and giggle. Why share that with her? We all need to know that. And, you know, this is just all a part of what hospice does. Our goal is to keep you at home or wherever, you know, a home-like setting. And that could be in a nursing home. We see in nursing homes patients coming in and out of the emergency room almost on a regular basis at the hospital. And you bring a dementia patient in an ambulance with sirens going, you lay them on a gurney in the emergency room. They lay there, you know, Alan, for a couple hours. They're frightened out of their wits because, you know, in the nursing home, that was their home, and they were used to their surroundings and the people that were there. They get into an emergency room, and it just raises their agitation and their confusion. We get them stabilized in the emergency room, and then we put them in ICU, and they might have come in with pneumonia or a urinary tract infection or something like that. And then they spend a few days in ICU till their fevers are gone. ICU is no place for peace and quiet. And then we put them on a nursing unit. They get better, and then we send them back to the nursing home. Well, with hospice, when their dementia is very, very advanced, they don't know anyone. They're curled up in a fetal position. Why do we do this to them? You know, pneumonia used to be the old man's best friend. It isn't anymore. So with hospice, we keep them in the nursing home, and they don't have to go back to the hospital if that's what the family chooses. And then hospice goes to the nursing home and keeps those symptoms managed. We might manage the fever without treating the illness and let that be their final event. And it's so much more peaceful that way. And I could tell you story after story of how...
I'll bet that you've had tremendous experience. You know, one thing I just have to mention to you, Judy, unfortunately, we were coming to the end of the interview, mm-hmm. and I do want to give you an opportunity to share with the listening audience anything else that you would like to say that you haven't gotten a chance to, and again, also to please give your contact information.
Well, again, you can go to my website, www.spiritmattersauthor.com. My book is Spirit Matters, How to Remain Fully Alive with a Life-Limiting Illness. It's available from Amazon, Barnes & Noble online, and it is out in a Kindle edition. I really encourage you to read this book. It's only $13. I wrote it for lay people, but my people down here where I live, they're buying copies for their physician. They're sending copies of this to their adult children, saying, this is what I want when I have a life-limiting illness. I'm saying to your listeners, please get educated. The most common comment that hospice hears, and as I said, I've traveled all over the country and gone to conferences, the most frequent comment is, why didn't anyone tell me about this before now? I have needed this help for so long, but I didn't know I could get it. It's free, Alan. It's paid for by Medicare, Medicaid, and private insurance. We never turn anyone away.
That's good to know. That's really good to know. Judy, I want to thank you for being a guest.
Well, this has been what I do, and I love doing it, and I would like to be able to do this as often as possible. Thank you, Alan.
Life-changing insight tip of the week.
As a practical, interactive, solution-focused therapist, Dr. Alan Simberg's treatment approach is to provide support and practical feedback to help clients resolve current challenges and long-standing patterns. With sensitivity and compassion, Dr. Simberg helps clients find solutions to a wide range of life challenges and psychological issues. Dr. Simberg specializes in a number of areas, including addiction and recovery solutions, family, parenting, and relationship issues, depression and anxiety, spiritual counseling, and more. Blending conventional and complementary approaches, Dr. Simberg draws on a variety of styles and techniques to to incorporate what will be most helpful for each client. Find out more information or contact Dr. Allen at allensimberg.com. Let Dr. Allen Simberg help to enhance your life through effective therapies.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to Life Changing Insights. This is your host, Dr. Allen Simberg, and I want to thank you for joining me this afternoon. Before ending today's show, I want to talk with you about anger. And my Life Changing Insight tip of the week has to do with what I consider to be the most effective strategies that can be used to manage anger. The first and most important thing to do thickens. You may feel tension in your abdominal area. You may also notice a shortening of breath. And what I mean by that is you may notice that you're taking short, quick breaths. Now, these symptoms are not only a symptom of anger, it's the fight or flight. Angry, you get into a mode of reaction that is preparing you to confront situations, highly dangerous situations. This response related to anger can actually be life-saving. But in our day and age, we don't come across many of those situations, especially when you're at home or if you're at a party or if you're with friends. You may have the kind of job where you're in danger quite frequently. But I'm talking about everyday experiences where an extreme reaction is really not warranted. So by recognizing that you are in the of becoming angry, the second thing to do will help you to de-escalate that anger. So again, the importance is the sooner that you recognize that you're getting angry, the quicker and the most likely it will be that you will be able to prevent yourself from going into a full-blown rage. Now, acknowledge that you are angry, or that hopefully you're recognizing that you're in the process of getting angry. The next step is to take a few slow, deep, relaxing breaths. Rather than allowing yourself to focus on the situation, and also not allowing yourself to focus on the emotional distress you may be experiencing. The reason you do that is the less you focus on something, the more likely you'll be able to manage it because you will have less emotion affecting you. So when you're able to just focus, a relaxing breath, another thing you might do is you might distract your attention. Do your best to take your mind off of what's going on. And I'm not saying you should necessarily just totally ignore it, but do your best to not overly focus on it. Now, if not, certain ideas of what you can do is something so simple as if you're drinking water or you're having some juice or maybe whatever kind of beverage you may be drinking at the time, hopefully it won't be anger because anger will affect your judgment. But if you're not drinking alcohol, at least you're not drinking that much to the point where it's overly affecting you, even just having a sip of a drink can help you to have a break in the emotion that you're feeling. Now, another example might be is if you're having an argument with someone, and obviously what I'm going to say depends on the nature of the argument, you might also just actually physically leave that situation for a moment. So one example of how you could do that is you could just excuse yourself and say, you'll be right back, but you need to use the restroom. Another example might be is if this is an ongoing problem, you can prearrange before there is anger. You can prearrange that if a situation gets to a point where either of you are having difficulty managing it, you just ask for what's commonly referred to as a timeout. And you just simply say, listen, I need 5 minutes. I need 10 minutes. I'm going to go for a walk. I'm going to go in the other room, whatever. I'll be back. And, of course, it's obviously important to keep to your word and to come back. So by doing these things, whether it be distraction or actually taking a break, this will free your ability to think more clearly and make a reasonable decision about what to do. The key is to manage your anger as effectively as possible and not to allow it to overwhelm you. Anger is obviously letting you know there is something wrong, but anger is irrational. The anger does not have reason. The key is to manage your emotions so that you can use your mind to come to the best possible solution. I want to thank all of you for joining me today. I want to invite you back to listen to next week's show, Life Changing Insights with Dr. Alan Simberg, next Tuesday between 3 and 4 o'clock. I want to wish you a great afternoon and a wonderful week. Good afternoon, everyone.
Thank you for joining us on Life Changing Insights with Dr. Alan Simberg, brought to you by the Tough Talk Radio Network. A special thanks to all of our sponsors. If you'd like to be a sponsor or a guest, please go to toughtalkradionetwork.com.